Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Chaneinu Vaneinu, Kein Banu Maasim. Asei Imanu, Tzedaka V'Chesed. Asei Imanu, Tzedaka V'Chesed. Avinu Malkeinu is a song with origins that are at least 2,000 years old. The famous Rabbi Akiva, who died in the year 163 CE, is recorded having used these verses to end a drought. It is one of the most famous and beautiful and yearning prayers in the Jewish tradition. I have especially always loved singing it when I was attending services in synagogue, singing it together with a congregation. Somehow it is always hard for me to bring this prayer to a close. I feel like it wants to go on and on, or maybe I just want to go on and on with it. And it does go on and on. It has gone on and on. Literally since before recorded history, Jewish people have dedicated themselves at this time of year to the introspection, confession, atonement, and hopefully salvation that are the promise and hope of the Jewish high holidays. Rosh Hashanah, the new year, started us off a few days ago, and now we are in the days of awe, as some of you know, the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, 10 days to do the holy work, culminating in the gravity and completion of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. The days are opened, marked, and closed with the sounding of the shofar, the ram's horn. As Rabbi Irving Greenberg points out, what sets the high holy days apart from all the other Jewish holidays is not just that they are the most important holidays in the Jewish calendar, they are also the only Jewish holidays that do not commemorate either liberation or catastrophe. You may know that joke about Jewish holidays, that they're all the same. They tried to kill us. We survived. Let's eat. These are also the only holidays to focus on the individual and the meaning of an individual's life. I always think this is one of the reasons that it's especially easy to explore these holidays for the lessons they hold to us as Unitarian Universalists, because we are all about supporting the individual's journey and what we individuals learn from journeying together. The high holidays start with a lot of hope and celebration. Rosh Hashanah, we eat sweet things. We gather with family. My parents are here with me this weekend to celebrate Rosh Hashanah. My dad is there in the second pew to join us for services today. We wish each other a sweet new year. And then the rubber hits the road because we move into a time of trial. And I don't mean tribulation kind of trial. Despite how challenging the world and local events are every day, I mean actual trial. Law and order, Perry Mason, how to get away with murder kind of trial. The 10 days of awe are the time that we have to get our case together, to do what we can to clear or absolve ourselves of wrongdoing so that when the trial begins, and we only get a one day, the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, on that day of trial and judgment, the judge will be merciful. And the idea is that mercy is the best we can hope for because the humbling, ultimate truth is that we're all guilty. The fact that we're on trial becomes more and more sobering as we get nearer to the final day when the judge and jury, and yes, for the purposes of the holy days, the judge and jury are the same thing, one decider who hands down both verdict and sentence. So we're in that period, the days of awe, longer than some vacations, and yet nothing at all. When we consider that Jewish tradition holds that our very lives are on the line, our right to take up space in the world for another year. Now, Unitarian Universalism doesn't talk a lot about humbleness. I don't know if you've noticed it, but I certainly have. A little humility, or a lot, is, I think, a good thing. Enough humility to admit that good as we try to be, and honest as we try to be, and generous as we try to be, and virtuous and just and open-minded and open-hearted and compassionate as we try to be, sometimes we let ourselves down. And that's not all, because inevitably, in letting ourselves down, one way or another, we let others down, near or far. Of that, at least, of imperfection and lapses, we are guilty. And I know I'm using language we don't use a lot, and it's a stretch, but I want to be honest to the Jewish understandings of these things, because I do believe, as a Unitarian Universalist, we learn in encountering these things that are not usual for us. So of that, at least, we're guilty, and we may be guilty of bigger things as well. Bigger things, not just lapses, but abuses. Not just of compassion fatigue, but of cruelty. Not just of selfishness, but of closed-mindedness, or bigotry, or even violence, because please know that these things move in us and in our communities just as they do everywhere else and in other communities. We are not immune to them. We don't elude them. We're not above them. What we can do, and what the High Holidays say we must do, is contend with them. And if they are ours, admit them and atone for them. Forgiveness is possible for any of us. As our own universalism affirms, none of us is too good for this world, and none of us is too damned for it. So here's the catch. In the Jewish system of understanding, we don't get to say whether we're forgiven. The only one who gets to forgive us is the one we have wronged. If we can't solicit forgiveness from them, things are not going to look good from the judge come Yom Kippur, literally Judgment Day. So this seems like a good moment to address the judge. Because what if we don't believe in God, as many of us don't? What happens to this complex forgiveness mechanism then? In the Jewish understanding, to be clear, God is on high, we're existing on the mortal plane, and unless forgiveness happens on this plane, there's no forgiveness that happens on this plane. Does that make sense? Okay. This is contingent on this. So if we don't believe in God, what about this piece? Here's my answer. Because the model is one that places primary importance on forgiveness on the mortal plane, between the wrongdoer and the wronged, the forgiveness mechanism works regardless of our theology, whether we believe we are being ultimately judged by our own conscience, or providence, or God. Still, if we believe that ultimately we cannot absolve ourselves, that we must first be absolved by those we wrong, and that any capacity for ultimate forgiveness depends on that, the center holds, regardless of the theological context we have for it. The first time I learned about this understanding of forgiveness was in a short story that we were taught at school when I was a pretty little girl. I was in elementary school, and it was called The Sunflower. Is anybody familiar with that story by Simon Wiesenthal? It's a heavy-duty story. I look back on it now, and I think, I can't believe they had us learn this in elementary school. But it's a true story. Simon Wiesenthal was a Holocaust survivor who was once called to the bedside of a terminally wounded Nazi. And the Nazi told him about an atrocity that he had committed. He had set a house full of Jews on fire. And then they shot anyone who tried to leave the burning building. And it was weighing terribly on him now as he was dying. And he was in torment over it. So he told Simon Wiesenthal how sick he was in his soul over what he did, and he completely owned his responsibility, and he made no excuses, and he said how he wished he could pay for what he had done. But now he had no way and no time because he was dying. And so he asked Simon Wiesenthal, as a Jew and a Holocaust survivor, for forgiveness. And what Mr. Wiesenthal did was he told him that it was not for him to forgive, that for forgiveness he must seek it from those he wronged. And he left the man dying in his bed. When I first read this story as a young girl, I thought the point of it that was that living without even the hope of forgiveness is hell. And that what the Nazi did was so terrible that Mr. Wiesenthal, it was actually unforgivable. He didn't say it to him, but he felt it, and so he left him there in torment as his judgment. But when I later, much later in divinity school, studied Jewish theology, I realized that Mr. Wiesenthal was actually following what the faith holds as true. It really wasn't for him to offer forgiveness or absolution. He actually didn't have the power to do it, which is so sobering. The idea that we can only gain forgiveness from those we wrong. Because the wrong one may refuse forgiveness. And so much hangs in the balance, our very lives, according to Jewish theology. The other thing is that forgiveness has to be real, which is not a point to overlook. Surely a lot of us have the experience of either giving or receiving forgiveness that was not real, and how empty that is. How empty that is. It has to be real. And the other idea in Jewish understanding is that you are not compelled to forgive. You have to search your heart. Can you forgive? This person is asking for your forgiveness. They're offering to atone. Can you forgive? But maybe the answer is no, which we don't talk a lot about either. Rarely are our own stories anything like this drastic. During the 10 days of awe every year, I talk to everyone in my family and my circle of close friends, and I apologize to them. And I offer atonement for anything I've done or said in the past year to hurt them. This is so lovely for me because this year I get to do that in person to a lot of people that I've had to call on the phone for so many years. But it's a common High Holy Days tradition. Some years I call around and it turns out I'm in good shape. No one names anything that I have done that they've been holding on to, anything that I need to apologize or atone for, or I already did. Either way, we're good. But I can never be sure how these phone calls and conversations will go. And sometimes I think I'll be in the clear, and then the conversation goes a different direction. And I learned something that I forgot, or maybe was entirely unaware of, and it's lurking and it's staining the relationship between myself and someone I love. That is a nasty surprise every time. I both look forward to and dread these conversations every year. And I am always glad when they're done. I am always so glad when they're over, and that I have had them. I am so glad that I've had them, especially if there was one I was dreading, to have gone through that cycle, to have cleared the connection between us, to know that I am forgiven and right with my loved ones. That feeling is not just good, and this is what I think is important here. It's not just a good feeling, it is a refreshing feeling. We all know the feeling of being forgiven by someone for something. And it doesn't just sort of ease something in us, it kind of lifts us, kind of renews us. It is empowering, it gives us back, it gives me back some essence of life, of hope, of spirit that I realize only then has been a little eroded or worn or tired over the course of the year. Suddenly, everything old is new again. And I find myself living into the words of the 20th century poet T.S. Eliot's work, Little Gidding. What we call the beginning is often the end. And to make an end is to make a beginning. The end is where we start from. In the end, the judge, howsoever we understand that judge, looks for forgiveness in order to judge with mercy. And judgment tempered by mercy is the promise towards which the whole holiday cycle moves. And in that, it also fits well with Unitarian Universalism. The arc of these ancient sacred days is its own moral universe, and it bends, as we love to say, in the words originally coined by Unitarian minister Theodore Parker and adopted so powerfully by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., it bends toward justice. It is surely not for me to know if your conscience is clear. The High Holy Days suggest it's not even for you to judge if your conscience is clear. Our conscience depends on the forgiveness of others. And any reprieve, any fresh start, depends on that. If this sermon has spoken to you, then may I suggest you may know what you need to do in this season of harvest. Gather forgiveness. For all of us, wherever we dwell, the High Holy Days tell us that our lives depend at this time of year on that essential harvest. Tzedakah v'chesed, Avinu Malkeinu says, righteousness and loving kindness, these are what matter most, especially now. May your harvest be rich, and may it keep you until harvest time comes again. The High Holy Days conclude both with a fast, emptying us out, and then a feast, filling us up. We are alive, and we deserve life, true life. And life deserves us at our best. May the year before us be a good one, or in Hebrew, L'shana Tova. And may all be written into the book of life for another year. Amen.